Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by the Spotify Green Room, formerly known as the Locker Room app. Guys, Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform, free to download and use. Talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. Share your own experiences on the app. Start or join ongoing conversations. Watch games together. React to the biggest news, rumors, and games. And of course, I host a weekly show every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on the Spotify Green Room. The Bears Talk Underground presents Club 34/7. Be sure and join me. Come through and talk with me live. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS or Android app store. Create a profile, link to your Twitter, and join into the group. Follow me to be notified when my room goes live. And of course, every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 o'clock Eastern is when Club 34/7 hits the air. So be sure to join in on the fun, guys. You don't want to miss it. And be sure to follow me on the app so that you'll know anytime that I go live, because we'll be doing watch parties during the preseason. We'll be doing knee-jerk reactions during halftime, during the season, and things like that. Lots to do. This app opens up so many possibilities for interaction between me and you, my loyal audience. So be sure and download the Spotify Green Room app wherever you get your apps. Hey guys, here we go one more time for the AFC North, wrapping it up before we finally get to our NFC North brethren and start to wrap this thing up as we inch closer and closer to training camp and the start of the 2021 season. What's going on, everybody? Larry D back once again. And, you know, this is episode, I think, 11 for our opponent preview series. We got four more to go. We got Detroit next Monday, Minnesota next Thursday, Green Bay the following Monday, and then 2 weeks from today, we will have Lauren Cox on from Locked On Bears to preview our beloved Chicago Bears as we head into training camp the following week. So exciting times. We are in training camp month, and before you know it, training camp month will be, or, you know, like the month leading up to training camp will be over, and then it will be preseason month, and then shortly after that, it will be regular season. Life is back to as it should be month in September. So cannot wait for that to get along, especially since I have never been a big fan of summer. Even when I was a kid, I hated hot weather. I liked the only reason I liked summer was because it meant I had some time off from school, no school for a while. And we get to go to the beach. We get to go swimming, you know, things like that. But if you just want to go outside and play baseball, I'm good. I'm going to hang out in here and watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and, you know, the Flintstones and Tom and Jerry and all that and stuff. I'm good. You know, if you want to go swimming, I'm your guy. You want to go out and swing on the swings when it's 98 degrees and 1,000% humidity? I'm cool. I'm going to hang out with the family. And here, I'm going to go upstairs and play Super Mario Brothers for the 15th million time in my bedroom. So I'm good. But so the end of summer will signal the end of our waiting period for football and will also mean the end of this god-awful season that I'm a fall guy. I've always been a fall guy. And, you know, temperature-wise and because it means football is back, I'm a fall guy. So anyway, to help us wrap up the AFC North as the Bears look for their third straight AFC North championship will be the Pittsburgh Steelers and Christopher Carter, from the Locked On Steelers podcast. And, you know, had an interesting conversation with him. As I'm sure you've all learned from our previous three AFC North guests, not a very high opinion of what the Steelers may or may not do in 2021. You will find that Chris disagrees with that, that as a Steeler fan, as somebody who spends time up close and personal with the team, he happens to think that 2021 is going to be one of those years where everybody doubts and hates on the Steelers and they come back and they wreck shop. So we'll see. But, you know, we did talk a lot about the end of the season collapse that the Steelers had to start 11-0 and then go 1-5 down the stretch, including back-to-back losses to the Browns week 17. And then the night of just the wild card round where, you know, it just was not going to be their night. You know, Cleveland took advantage of every single mistake that Pittsburgh made, and Pittsburgh made them in droves early on in the football game. So they were just kind of snake bitten from the very beginning. And that's how their season ended when, you know, at the beginning for the first 3 months of the season, 11-0, they're running roughshod through everybody. And, you know, it's like then came that loss on that like Tuesday afternoon game to the Washington football team. And it seemed to like open the floodgates to this is how you beat the Steelers going forward. So we talked about that, where the Steelers project to go from here, how excited they are about Najee Harris, their first round pick, and everything else in between. So let me go ahead and get out of the way here. Bring in our guest, Chris Carter from the Locked On Steelers podcast to preview the Pittsburgh Steelers. It is the finale of the AFC North opponent preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out loud. So here we are, the fourth and final team of the AFC North, closing the book on them as we move through our opponent previews for 2021. And defending AFC North champion Pittsburgh Steelers are the last team that we're going to be previewing. And here to help us preview these Steelers from the Locked On Steelers podcast, Christopher Carter. Chris, how we doing, man?
I'm doing great, Larry. Thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
It's my pleasure. So you're a new guest to the show, and I like to ask my new friends all the same three questions to get started. Number one, where are you from? Number two, where are you now? And number three, your favorite moment as a fan of your beloved Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, first of all, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh.
All right.
Grew up on the East End in Homewood, and went to Alderdice, home of Curtis Martin and Wiz Khalifa and Mac Miller. So got to come up in a nice area of the city.
Okay.
Went away for 4 years to Cheney University. Came right back for law school at Pittsburgh. You know, oh, started nice. Working in that field. And when I was working some unpaid internships, because that's the game of law school.
Right.
I needed to make some extra money, so I started blogging about the Steelers, and then blogging, you know, got a little bit bigger, and then I got picked up by a legit credentialed website, dkpittsburghsports.com, and years later, now I am a credentialed writer on the Pittsburgh Steelers and Pitt football and Pitt basketball.
Nice.
Also hosting podcasts for them and the Locked On Steelers podcast. So I'm still in Pittsburgh.
Awesome.
And I love it here. And I gotta say, you know, these days I'm more of the objective guy that, you know, covers the team. So it's not really about fandom these days, but I mean, growing up in Pittsburgh, and if you're a football guy, which I was,
right,
you gotta be a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And the moment that I never forget is James Harrison's interception return.
Nice.
In the Super Bowl. And San Antonio Holmes was great too, but it was also just the dynamics of the interception. Like, you know, I Cheney University is the first historically black college and university in the country. It's out near Philly.
Okay.
And so I'm watching this game in college, and I'm surrounded by Eagles fans who just badly want the Steelers to lose, which is odd because it's like they rarely play each other, but Philly hates Pittsburgh. So that's his thing. So I'm surrounded by this. So I call my dad on the phone, and I'm like, yo, Pop, like, you know, like, this is crazy right now. They're about to score. You know, these guys is around me. This is just annoying. He's like, I know, we're hanging in there. But we had all season long, because, you know, my college, we had like an 8-second lead on the feet. So we had been very good about whenever I saw something, I wouldn't respond if I was on the phone with my old man.
Uh-huh.
And that way he could sort of see it live and not like know what's about to happen.
Sure.
But that play, I lost my mind. And I just remember thinking like, oh crap, this is ridiculous. I'm surrounded by all these fans. And then when James Harrison catches the ball, I'm like, oh, he's got the ball. He's still running. Get out of his way. And my dad, who, like, you know, he's watching the game, you know, in Pittsburgh, and he's like, what are you talking about? They're in the huddle. They're at the 2-yard line. Who could be running? And as James Harrison is scoring, I hear it go live on his end. He's like, and it's like just experiencing it, like it like right again, like 5-8 seconds after it happened. And then as James Harrison passes out in the end zone because he's so tired from running,
right,
I turn around and every single Eagles fan who was tormenting me left the room. Like they weren't even there. Like it wasn't even like there was a sign of them. They just disappeared. And I was like, man. And then it all happened again for the San Antonio Holmes touchdown catch. That day was just it was too cool experiencing it in another fan base's area, and then more Steelers fans that were on campus joined around. So that was a really cool moment.
I bet, yeah. I can imagine. I'm kind of an underdog kind of guy, so I was pulling for the Cardinals that day, but like I could appreciate what was happening, that James Harrison, I mean, what a dagger that was, because the Cardinals were going to score. They were going to take the lead going into halftime, and then to have Harrison literally rip the heart right out of their chest, and go end to end with that interception. And of course you get the assist, the unintended assist from Antrell Roll on the sidelines, because he got in Larry Fitzgerald's way. stopped him from catching Harrison until it was too late. So, it was always funny when I saw like the wide field shot of that, and Antrell Roll like an idiot standing on the sidelines watching James Harrison run down the field, and boom, he gets knocked over by Larry Fitzgerald, who's trying to catch him, who's actually the only guy on the field who could catch him at that point, and because he did run him down finally. But like I said, he finally caught him at like the 4-yard line, and by the time he dragged Harrison's big ass down, they were in the end zone, so it was too little too late, thanks to Antrell Roll.
Yeah, and Larry Fitzgerald, and see, that's the other thing about that game, is that when he scored that touchdown at the end, that illogical side was over.
Yeah,
it was bittersweet for Pittsburgh, because he is
the
favored son. Yeah, he when you talk about Pitt guys, it's Dan Marino, him, Curtis Martin, Tony Dorsett. Like, he's in that Mount Rushmore of Pitt football players.
Sure.
So when he scored it was just like, that sucks, but damn it, we love you, Larry. Like, That was such a special Super Bowl for so many reasons for Pittsburghers. And then also for it to be the sixth winning Super Bowl and set the what nobody else had ever done at the time.
Right.
And still to this day, it is the most Super Bowls in the NFL. That was certainly a special night.
Yeah. Yeah. That moment that you're talking about with Larry Fitzgerald, how it was bittersweet. I had a similar moment in 2001. When the Bears played the Eagles in the divisional round of the playoffs, and a high school classmate of mine was playing for the Eagles at the time. He was a fullback named Cecil Martin. And we had no problem putting pressure on McNabb, could not catch him to save our lives. He was only in like year three of his career, so he was still at the height of his powers as far as his pocket movement and everything.
Right.
He ran around in the pocket, dodged and dissed every Bear defender that came his way. And after the dust had settled, he found a wide open Cecil Martin in the end zone for a touchdown.
Mm.
So it was like, what a dagger, because we were this close to finally catching McNabb and taking him down. But it was my homie from high school that caught a touchdown pass. So it was just like... but yay, Cecil. I guess you couldn't pick another time to do that, dude. Seriously, right here, right now. So very bittersweet moment. I know exactly how that feels. So, but the reason that I ask about where you're from and where you are is because as I started doing interviews, I started back in the 2015 season, finally having guests on the show. I've been doing the show since 2007. And
nice.
It always turns out that you are the exception, not the rule, as far as the person that I'm speaking with, the team that they represent, they don't live in the same market with their team. Mm-hmm. Like my Denver gal is from South Carolina. My Pittsburgh, the last guy from Miami, excuse me, not in Pittsburgh, Miami he lived in Colorado. My guy from the 49ers lives in Austin, Texas, and stuff like that. It just seems like they're scattered about. For a while there, my guy for the Buccaneers was in the Netherlands. That's who I was talking to for the Buccaneers. Finally found a local guy in Florida, but for the first few times that we played the Bucs, I was talking to a guy from the Netherlands. Talk about trying to arrange a time to talk to that guy. Not easy.
with a, right, with no, a 7-hour time difference and things like that. So it was always interesting trying to get him on the horn. But I appreciate you having you on, and let's go ahead and dive into your guys. A very interesting, weird season that the Steelers have. They start 11-0, and you know they look like the class of the NFL. Then comes that loss to Washington. It was almost like they were exposed after that, because the losses just piled up before they finally, you know, before the season just finally ended and they could run into the postseason.
No, yeah, that's definitely the vibe here in Pittsburgh. With that, like, after that loss, it wasn't sure if that was going to start a snowball that turns into an avalanche,
right?
Or if that was just a one time thing. And honestly, what it exposed was just how the Steelers were just so beat up and left alone. They had so few options left.
Right.
You know, this was a team that went into the year basically saying, screw it, we're not going to be able to be a dominant running game. They didn't invest in their offensive line. They passed on J.K. Dobbins in the second round for Chase Claypool. They said, you know, we're just going to rock out with Benny Snell and James Conner, and that's going to be our run game. And for the first 6 or 7 weeks, that worked. Through 7 games, you know, even before, like, they got to 10-11-0, they were averaging 130 yards on the ground. They were running the ball. They were finding different ways to make it work. But eventually, teams realized, like, hey, this is not James Conner, Benny Snell. They're not killers. They're not going to crush us. We got to take away the short passing game. And then that's going to start bobbing up the offense. And then late in the season, when push came to shove, teams were just sitting back, waiting for Ben Roethlisberger's quick slants, his underneath drag routes that he was targeting. And the quick passing game that the Steelers basically opted to as a replacement of a run game that they couldn't depend on. And that became really Ben Roethlisberger's downfall.
Right.
Because, you know, as it's okay to pass the ball short sometimes and to work that as a serious part of your game, but it can't substitute a run game. And that's where, especially with Ben Roethlisberger, who is a gunslinger, is a tough SOB,
right,
is a big dude who still, he can, like, despite what many people say, he can still get the deep ball down the field. And in fact, I found at the end of the season when he was throwing the deep ball, that was when the offense was moving its best. But when he tries to get too cerebral, that's when most of his mistakes happen. And you saw that in that 4-interception game that he had against the Browns in the playoffs. That's sort of what happened in my eyes. And then on top of that is that the defense, which is the strength of the team, just lost too many things.
Yeah.
They lost Devin Bush in the middle of the season, and they were able to mitigate that. But when you lose Devin Bush, the highest drafted player on the roster or by the Steelers since 2000, at 10th overall, no, they haven't had a guy that they drafted higher since Plaxico Burress in the 2000 draft at 8th overall.
Right.
When you lose him, you find a way to survive, but then you lose Bud Dupree, who was on pace to have another double-digit sack season alongside T.J. Watt. And then, you know, eventually you lost Alex Highsmith, who was his replacement. So now you're down to, like, a fourth-string guy at edge rusher next to T.J. Watt. And then Joe Hayden went down with COVID. So it was just thing after thing after thing. Just kept, you know, whittled away at them, and eventually they ran out of answers because they weren't as balanced. They especially weren't as balanced. They were the worst rushing offense in the NFL last year.
Wow, yeah, not exactly something that's synonymous with Pittsburgh Steeler football, no, being lousy in the run game. That's not something that you see very much. I mean, much like the Bears, it's running the football and defense is the calling card for the Steelers, and the fact that they, have also low-key had one of the best passing attacks with Bradshaw and Stallworth and Lynn Swann back in the day, all the way up to Roethlisberger and his litany of weapons and such. It's always been, they identify through the run, they identify through defense. So for those to be failing you at the end of the year, that's not where you want that to be taking place. And then when you go to the Cleveland game, granted, like I said, I'm an underdog guy, so I was rooting for the Browns. They'd been, mired in losses and just, mediocrity. I mean, and mediocrity is a generous word for what the Browns were, but, it was like I was pulling for them in that game. But it's like when you watch the game, that wild card game, you just have to, I mean, as a Steelers fan, if I was a Steelers fan, I would just write that one off. It's like, dude, this was just not our night. For the things to go wrong in the way that they did, as much as they did, as fast as they did, it's like, okay, this is going to be their night. Our season is over with. It's not so much that the Browns are that much better than us. It's just that, you know, they had our number tonight, and it just wasn't meant to be. Because, like, balls bouncing the snap going over Roethlisberger's head, it's like, this is just not going to happen for us today.
Right, and that was the thing, is that, like the Steelers lost by 11 in a game where they handed the Browns 5 turnovers. Like, it wasn't like Denzel Ward, you know, read Ben Roethlisberger's eyes and just, you know, studied this route and just jumped at the right time. No. Marquise Pouncey, first play of the game, snaps the ball over Ben's head. And I was talking to our guy, Jeff Lloyd, of the Locked On Browns podcast before the game. And I was like, the biggest thing here is, can the Steelers keep the Browns from getting a lead? If they keep the Browns from getting a lead, they win this game, because the Browns do not play well from behind, especially against teams that have stouter defenses and get after the quarterback like the Pittsburgh Steelers, because then they can't run the short passing game. But the Steelers literally handed them a lead on the first play of the game without them having to even do anything. So. Yeah. That when that happened, I was like, oh, that's a wrap. Like, this, because now you're about to go to Nick Chubb and you're about to go to Kareem Hunt. And the Steelers had just gotten back one of their backup linebackers in Robert Spillane, and they couldn't effectively stop the run, especially with, you know, their guys were hurt up. I think Vince Williams was recovering from COVID at the time. He had gotten it, but was, you know, not the same man, and Devin Bush not being there. And again, with two of your edge rushers down, they were just extremely thin up front. And they just got picked at, and that's what allowed the Browns' offense to kind of keep the ball rolling whenever the Steelers kept making mistakes on their end. And then even at the interceptions, I mean, like, a bunch of those interceptions, wide open guys, Ben just overthrows them. And you know, some of the talk that we've had in analyzing what happened with Ben Roethlisberger, also on top of all the short throws and all the things that he did, when we talked to him in minicamp, one thing he said that his doctor told him was that, hey, like, You had a rough year, because in rehabbing that elbow, he threw over 1,000 passes before OTAs and minicamp even started last year. And so when going into that season, his arm got tired, like, around that week 10, week 11 time of the year. And that was that kind of led to him not being his best self. So now he's had a regular year. And the way he spoke to us at minicamp a couple weeks back, he feels a lot more confident about where his arm is. And just saying what I saw in the minicamp practice, he was launching the ball deeper down the field, looking comfortable. So it's going to be interesting to see where Ben is at 38 years old. I mean, even though, you know, he's up there, he's still not where Drew Brees was last year, where he could barely hit a slant. Ben can still do that. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, can they manage how much he has to do that?
Yeah, and can they protect him as well? Looking at the free agent signings, you go out and you steal Joe Haig from the Buccaneers. I don't know why you signed Rashad Coward. I don't know if that's going to work out for you guys, because it
can't body, man.
Yeah.
Can't body.
It sure as hell didn't work out for us. I was thrilled beyond thrilled that he was no longer our problem. And God bless the guy. He was a defensive tackle. He comes in, they switch him over to offensive line. And in 2019, he was actually pretty good, you know, but I don't know what it was about 2020. If it was that they were moving him around, or that they were playing him too much, or he wasn't, you know, ascending, you know, learning the position or what have you. Could have just been that we had a brand new offensive line coach and it just didn't gel. But he was the bane of my existence last year for a while. So, you know, good luck with him. I hope it works out, but don't be surprised if it doesn't on that one. And then BJ Finney, you sign away from the Bengals, and those are the additions. You lose Villanueva. He's off to Baltimore. And is it Matt Feiler? Goes to the Chargers.
Matt Feiler, yeah.
Feiler, excuse me. And then, of course, the big loss, Marquise Pouncey retires. And so that's where B.J. Finney comes in, right?
Right. Well, B.J. Finney is also a former Steeler. He was an undrafted guy they had for 4 or 5 years. Right. So that's the thing about B.J. Finney, is that they brought him back because he was Marquise Pouncey and David DeCastro and Ramon Foster's replacement over, like, the 4 or 5 year span. They were all together. And he was always solid. Like, I think, in fact, he started in, like, 13 games. And when he starts, they're 11-2. So, he was always good. Now, what happened to him was his contract year was up, and the Seahawks offered him more money than the Steelers were willing to pay. So he had to go out there. But then the pandemic hit. And then he was, like, everything was locked down. He wasn't trying to put his health and his family at risk. And so he said, I kind of stayed inside for a bit, and I wasn't in football shape. And when he showed up to Seahawks training camp, It took him a bit to get into football shape, and then he wasn't, the best version of himself. And then eventually they traded him to the Bengals. And when they traded him to the Bengals, like, they were like, yeah, you're kind of here, but you're just here as a replacement. And they never really used him. So then they let him go. And I was like, oh, well, we're not taking you forward. And so the Steelers like, well, you know what, buddy? Come on back. And as long as you're in shape, you can still be that depth guy. Now, the question is, can he be the starter? They're expecting Kendrick Green to step into that role. And I can say they're very confident about him doing so this year with how hard-nosed he is and, him being a physical presence. That's really that. Now, as far as like Rashawn Coward, yeah, like he's a depth piece at best.
Yes.
Right now, he's not a guy that anyone's looking to start. Losing Villanueva, honestly, was kind of what a lot of Pittsburghers were hoping would happen. He wasn't a good run blocker anymore. He wasn't the best pass protector. He got called for holding penalties, and it was just kind of like, okay, like Villanueva again. Undrafted guy, they took off the Eagles and converted him into a left tackle, and it was a great story for him to make that career here in Pittsburgh. But it was time, and they're excited about their two offensive tackles that they got right now, Chukwuma Okorafor moving to left tackle, his more preferred spot, and Zach Banner, who won the right tackle spot last year, but then suffered an injury that knocked him out in week one of the season last year. So they want to see what those two guys have. But yeah, they weren't too active in free agency because they were more so concerned with keeping the guys they have on the roster. Keep Juju Smith-Schuster when he was getting offers for more money to go to the Chiefs and the Ravens. They find a way to bring back Tyson Alulu to solidify their interior defensive line depth. Things like that to keep the roster together for the most part, and also keeping Cameron Sutton, a cornerback who can play both slot and outside for the team. That was their priority this season, keeping as many of the important long-term pieces there. But you can't do that with everybody. Bud Dupree, with his last 2-3 years in the NFL, somebody was going to pay him. And the Tennessee Titans did with, I think it was like a 5-year, $70-some million contract. The Steelers weren't going to afford that, especially in a pandemic year. And especially when, TJ Watt's contract is coming up down the corner. Minkah Fitzpatrick's contract is coming up around the corner. There's so many big guys they got to pay. They've got to strategize it. Now, they do have the second most amount of cap space next year with over $70 million. So they're going to be big spenders in keeping those guys and maybe signing another couple guys to big, long contracts. But yeah, this year was a very more modest, like, hey, let's just keep the core that we want together right now, and then we'll make our big moves next year.
Yeah, and the Steelers provided me with some fodder during the offseason when they re-signed or restructured Roethlisberger's contract to get his cap hit from $41 million down to $19 million, and with this phantom 5-year contract that's really a 1-year deal where they're stretching out the cap hit over the next several years. And everything. And it's just like, I've had an issue with that kind of stuff for a while, especially since it was something that cost the Bears Kyle Fuller this offseason because we were moving money around for him to make his cap hit over $20 million for this upcoming season when I think he was only scheduled to make like 11 or 12. And Roethlisberger was only supposed to make like 14 to 19 million somewhere in that area and had a cap hit of over 40 million dollars because of the move this to here, restructure that, and all that kind of stuff. It's like wondering why this hustle is even legal in the NFL, but teams take advantage of it because it is, and because of it, they were able to shave $20 million off the cap when they made that move with Roethlisberger.
Yeah, that was just a void years move. Like for years, and what the Steelers do is if they like you a lot, they'll make sure that you get your money.
Yeah,
but it'll count against the cap until later in your career. And then they'll find ways to work around that. Like, hey, we'll just make you dead cap space or we'll send you to an extension. And now with the new void year rules, you can really just sign a guy and kind of Bobby Bonilla him. And just be like, you know what? We're going to pay you $1 million for the next 20 years. Now, of course, they don't allow that in the NFL. It's just the union's not nearly as strong to work things like that. But this void year option does give the players chance to get their money while teams are finding ways to kind of stretch it out and make it more manageable for the salary cap situation. And because that's part of the thing with the NFL too, is you want to keep core guys around longer. That's the whole thing here that owners are trying to make sure that they can keep their rosters in control and not have them flying all over the place. So, yeah, Ben taking that deal. And he legitimately, even though this was really a reworking, he did give up $5 million in overall money to give back to the Steelers to help them sign Juju Smith-Schuster, which he even admitted to us was something that he was advocating for and lobbying for in the background, both to Mike Tomlin and to Juju Smith-Schuster, to be like, hey, you know, I know the Chiefs are offering you more money. I know the Ravens are offering you more money. And I know that both of them have made it farther in the playoffs in the last 3 years than the Steelers. But this is still the place that you can call home, and we would at least like to do another ride with you here. So, Ben doing that, really, and it really countered a lot of narratives, because a lot of people think, like, oh, Ben doesn't care about the team. He cares about himself. Doing that and, him showing up for all the OTAs and all the minicamps, he's painting the picture like, hey, I'm treating this season very seriously. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, this is a team-first organization. He's doing all the right things right now.
So where do you think they go from here? Is this Ben's last ride? Are they going to push it out, or is it all hinge on how the season goes?
It mainly hinges how the season goes. Like, in general, a lot of people feel like, oh, this is definitely Ben's last year. But we don't know where his elbow is at. His arm is strong enough here. And this is the other thing here. The real big story of the season, Larry, is Najee Harris.
Yeah.
Him coming into Pittsburgh. If he stabilizes the offense, if he runs the ball consistently, Ben doesn't have to throw the ball nearly as many times. Games will be shortened because the clock will be running. The chains will be moving more without Ben having to do things. Then the play actually become a real threat again for the team. Now, if Ben, instead of averaging like 45 to 50 throws a game, if he averages 30 to 40 passes a game, that puts him in a place where, you know what, I could stick around another year after this because I'm not having to do all the work and tire my arm out every year. But still, 38 years old, you know, people got to understand, like, I don't know how old you are, Larry, but when you start to get older, it's harder to get up every morning. It's harder to do all the things you need to do as an athlete and prepare and train every day and diet and do all the right things. And that's where he's got to be looking at it. Like, you know what? I am a 100-over millionaire. I am going to go to the Hall of Fame. I have all these things locked up. How much do I really want to put myself through before I start moving on to the next part of my life where I just raise my kids, hang out with my wife, and, you know, do the fun things that I want to do in life without having to worry about football? That's where he's at. But if he has a good year and the Steelers have a balanced offense and the defense remains strong, I could see him coming back. Now, for the Steelers, they've put themselves in a position where they're kind of ready for anything. Like I said, next year they have a ton of cap space. Mm-hmm. We saw how all these quarterbacks moved around this year. They're ready for, like, if they have to get in the quarterback market, they'll have the money to take a stab at someone. Now, you know, maybe not Aaron Rodgers or something like that, but, you know, if a decent quarterback comes around, like how Matt Stafford was being, they can be like, you know what, we can trade a couple picks for that guy. We can make a couple moves over here. Someone that would just come in, and you don't have to be Patrick Mahomes, but if you're a good quarterback that can play above the line, you know, kind of the way Ryan Tannehill does for the Titans.
Yeah.
They're like, look, we got a young running back. We got a strong defense that's built around all these key players that are young and in their prime. Just come in here and don't suck. You know? And so I can totally see that happening. They want to see what they have in Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins duking it out in camp this year. I'm not too high on either of them, like, really solidifying any future plans this season. But they put themselves like, hey, you know what? We got money next year. Ben could stick around. We got two young quarterbacks with big arms. They've got options, and that's kind of where they just want to be, is that whatever happens, to have plans to go with the team that they have.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how Haskins works out, because I liked him coming out of Ohio State. The only reason that Washington was a good thing for him because it was home, you know, for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back home, that's always a nice story. But Jay Gruden didn't want him. That was a management call or an ownership thing. They wanted him. So that was basically never going to work out. And, I mean, it just explode last year when Rivera took over, and he's not shy about, like, this is not my guy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'd rather come out with, you know, 1.5 legs of Alex Smith over Dwayne Haskins and everything. So that was a problem all along. So I'm interested to see how it's going to be for him. You know, there's no pressure anymore. He's, you know, backing up Roethlisberger, who's going to play, you know, even if you have to carry him out there in crutches, Roethlisberger's going to play for you and everything. So there's no pressure. Even if he does come in, they're not expecting the world from him. He's the backup. It's temporary. And see how that may help him, like, settle down and maybe learn the game at the NFL speed and you know, kind of go from there. So I'm interested to see how Haskins is going to work out for you guys. But as we move on to the draft, you mentioned Najee Harris. He was sitting there at 24 for you guys. You go ahead and take him, the running back out of Alabama. You get, is it Freiermuth, the tight end from Penn State? Freiermuth, all right,
yeah.
From Penn State in the second round. Kendrick Green, a local guy for us here in Illinois, a guard from the U of I. And, you know, that's day one and two. I mean, we talked about Najee. What are we looking for from Freiermuth and Green here?
So Freiermuth, of course, was a huge offensive weapon for the Nittany Lions. He mm-hmm. was really the focus of their offense for a bit. He brings that receiving ability. He's really smooth, and that's how Eric Ebron described him, was a silky smooth playmaker that they're getting used to. They're going to want him to be more of a blocker than Ebron is, of course. Ebron, you know, more known for just being an athletic guy that can get down the field and, you know, drop the ball sometimes, but when he catches the ball, he really does flash brilliance at times.
Yeah.
You know, just inconsistency is his calling card. But they want Freiermuth to be more consistent. There's hope that he can be. So far, he seems to be taking on the process well, as far as, you know, what they expect of him. And then Kendrick Green, the guy that they're hoping to be a center, he was only temporarily a center at Illinois. He was more of a guard there. But when he played center, he had the part of a physical guy. He can pull and hit in space. When he locked onto a guy for a run play, he moved them. And he got out. He got guys out of the hole. That's something that Marquise Pouncey really wasn't doing anymore. Pouncey was, in the past, like, 2-3 seasons, Pouncey was more guys like, hey, you know the entire offense. You've been here for a decade. Just call things out. Make sure everyone else is on the same page. And don't be a liability. And that's kind of where he was for a few years. But that last year, I mean, he couldn't pull and block in space, which not all centers can do, but that was his calling card for most of his career. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't have the knees to do that anymore. And he suffered a lot of injuries. It took a lot of bounce back for him to get back a few times. And I think it just wore him down. And then with his knees, sometimes that gives up kind of position, and that leads to more bad snaps. And that snap over Ben's head in the playoff game, that wasn't the only one that happened that year. And in fact, even the year before with Mason Rudolph against the Rams, first play in that game, he stacked the ball over Mason's head, and it led to a touchdown for the Rams that they were able to bounce back and win that one. But, you know, it became a serious problem. And so now he was a liability. So Kendrick Green coming in here, he's going to be a guy that they want to say, hey, you're going to be physical. And something that is going to be different about the Steelers this year is how they block. Last year they had Sean Sterrett the last 2 years. As an offensive line coach, he took over for the legendary Mike Munchak, who was he's a Hall of Fame, Hall of Famer himself. And
oh, yeah.
He kind of revitalized his offensive line in the mid-2010s. But then he moved on, and then Sean Sterrett kind of took over. But Sterrett's philosophy of blocking was, hey, we're just going to protect fans. That is the goal here. And the Steelers even kind of revealed it over minicamp was that what they were being taught was, hey, fire off the ball, feel guys. Don't bowl them over. Don't follow through on your block. Just get 1-2 and then just try to, you know, hold your position and we'll see where we go with things. And that just didn't work for
yeah.
what the Steelers were trying to do. That wasn't the philosophy. That's why their running game, on top of having James Conner and Benny Snell. No, Conner, decent running back. No one that's going to change the game for you, but he can take what's there. But when you have an offensive line playing that kind of philosophy, that's not what's going to get a young kind of, you know, role-playing running back to make the plays. Now, Adrian Klemm, the new Steelers offensive line coach, I mean, we've been told by the players that he tells them every day, run through his face. That is the philosophy that they're going for with the Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line. So that's more of the old-school ideology, and that's what Kendrick Green does. That's what Dan Moore Jr., the guy that they drafted in the fourth round out of Texas A&M, that's what he does. But that's also what David DeCastro has been used to. Now, he hasn't played he didn't practice in minicamp and OTAs because he was kind of in civilian uniform, so we're going to see if he's going to be ready for training camp. But that's what Kevin Dotson does, who's a really young upstart guy. He was the fourth-round pick from last year. He really played really well over this past year in his rookie season, and people are looking for him to take the next step. The Steelers could have, a young physical offensive line if a few of these guys just work out for them and they gel together. And if they're that kind of physical and Kendrick Green does take the helm at center, it could be a perfect mix for what Najee Harris does out of the backfield.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting prospect of what could happen there. You know, when you were describing what the old coach, what his instructions were, it almost sounds lazy to me. You know, like just kind of get in his way for a second or two, and we'll work from it. We'll work with it from there and see how it goes. It's like, do you know how to play offensive line? Because that's not really how it works. Well, you know, it just sounds lazy to me.
Go ahead. Well, so here's the thing. Part of it, I think, was they just prioritized pass blocking. Like, they were passive more so.
And okay.
I wouldn't say lazy, because they still wanted you to get off the ball quickly, but not trying to overexert yourself. Because also the thing was, you had to realize the Steelers' offensive line in 2019, when he took over, it was one of the oldest in the NFL. There aren't too many offensive lines where you have the same starter for basically 4 or 5 years. And that's what the Steelers had for a bit. You know, you had Marquise Pouncey, Ramon Foster, who retired after 2019. You had Alejandro Villanueva for like 5 or 6 years. You had David DiCastro, who's still there. For a while, they had Marcus Gilbert, then Matt Filer filled in. Right tackle's probably been the one spot where they've been kind of rotational. But that group was all older, and I think that was their way of saying, hey, don't just protect Ben, but protect yourself. Because when you start to play more physical and the older guys do, that's when a lot more of your injuries happen. So I'm not making excuses for them.
Sure.
I do think that was where their philosophy was going. But again, that's why, like, all right, Marquise, you got to retire. You cost too much. You're up there in age. Your knees aren't the same. This is the direction the offense is going. I do think that's why you're going to see a different philosophy in how the Steelers operate as an offensive line. It's going to be interesting to see how they adapt to it.
Yeah, so you mentioned Dan Moore in the fourth round. This is your first of your day three picks. Buddy Johnson, another inside linebacker from – also from Texas A&M. You got Isaiah Loudermilk from Wisconsin, a defensive tackle. So your first six picks, it's SEC Big Ten across the board. And then finally in the sixth round, you go off script. Quincy Roach from Miami, a linebacker. Mm-hmm. Trey Norwood, a corner out of Oklahoma. And then a punter coming off the board. Yeah. Presley Harvin III from Georgia Tech. That's quite a name that guy's got. He sounds like one of Key and Peele's All-stars on that one. Presley Harvin III from Georgia Tech, a punter. So go ahead.
Funny enough, too, about Presley Harvin III, he's the first ever black punter to win the Ray Guy Award for best punter in college football.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I can tell you, as a guy who covered Pitt football last year and watching them play Georgia Tech, Georgia Tech's team was very bad. And Pitt defense, which was, you know, one of the, you know, they also really got after the quarterback with three guys that went in the NFL draft just on their defensive line. When they were getting after, they'd sack Georgia Tech twice, get a tackle for loss, and they'd be pinned inside the five. And then Presley Harvin would step on the field, and he would just boom, and the ball flies in the air with a ton of hang time, and then Pitt couldn't do anything. And then they went from Georgia Tech having the ball on their own five to Pitt having to start the next drive on their own 30. And that's the kind of stuff that he would do for Georgia Tech, and that was we're really into him. But then also Danny Smith, the special teams coach for the Steelers, said when he went to Presley Harvin's pro day, it was pouring down rain, he said. And normally when you're pouring down, you want the best conditions for your pro day. You want everything to be nice and crisp and move inside, do something, just show these guys what I can do. Mm-hmm. And he said Presley Harvin III was like, nah, we're going to do this in the rain. And he said he did it in the rain and still boomed those punts, and that's what made him say, look, we just got to get this guy some way, somehow on the team. And that was they had 2 seventh-round picks, and they used one on him. And he's looked interesting in these practices, man. I've seen him boom a couple. He gets ridiculous hang time. And he's honestly, they still have Jordan Berry, their punter for the past few years, who hasn't really felt pressure, and he's had some really bad moments here and there. But Jordan Berry, he showed up in these practices. I think he feels like, oh, crap, young guy's in here. We got to show up. So now that's going to be an interesting training camp battle, who wins out there. But Presley Harvin, definitely exciting there. Of those other guys you mentioned, Buddy Johnson, a run stuffer from Texas A&M, a big guy who I think in the long term they're hoping can just be the guy that pairs next to Devin Bush because he's the smaller, faster variety. Buddy Johnson, more of the bigger, let me get my face in the mix and plug up a blocker type of variety. So they're hoping he can develop that, but he's going to have to figure out special teams. Isaiah Loudermilk, you know, big guy. You know, he's ridiculously huge. He's like 6'6", I think, and like 300 pounds. And he's, you know, a decent athlete, but just still kind of awkward. He's got to finish his movements and get used to things. But that's why they took a stab on him. Quincy Roche, honestly, a guy that they didn't expect to be there. You know, when I talked to a lot of draft experts, because the Steelers did need a third edge rusher on their roster because Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt, they need backup behind those guys. And Roche was a guy that a lot of experts were saying was going to go in the third round, fourth round at the latest. And when they saw him in the sixth round, they're like, look at that guy. He's a tech. I see him being a technician at times with the different pass rush moves he has. He came from Temple, transferred to Miami, and had a decent year in the last year. So I'm interested to see how that goes. Trey Norwood, along with Shakur Brown, an undrafted free agent they signed out of Michigan State this year, both of them were tied for the third most interceptions in college football last year with 5. So they're hoping that some of those guys step in and can help in the secondary where they lost Steven Nelson and Mike Hilton, and they're going to be looking for some guys to step up.
Yeah, and as far as Presley Harvin, you know, when you draft a guy, you spend the draft pick, especially on a specialist like a punter, he's not just a camp leg. You're not bringing him in just to give the other guy a, you know, a little kick in the ass or anything like that. He's being pushed for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be, like you said, it's going to be a camp battle and somebody's going to lose their job. So, the incumbent, it's, you know, definitely the right mindset for him to come in and take this seriously and treat it. Cause like they said, you know, maybe if they brought him in as an undrafted rookie free agent, then yeah, maybe it's not as big a deal, but they use a draft pick on him. They went out and got him. You know, granted with like 5 picks left in the draft, but they spent draft capital on him. That means they're interested in some way, especially with punters and kickers and stuff. You know, this guy's going to be expected to do something other than just be, you know, a camp leg to push the veteran.
I agree.
So let's look at the schedule or as we start to wrap up here, Chris. You know, we, of course, the Steelers are the Steelers, so they're going to have all their national TV games. You got 5 of them scheduled right now, most of them in the back half of the season. But you start on the road at Buffalo. That should be an interesting game right off the bat. You come home for the Raiders and the Bengals, so your first AFC North matchup, week number 3. At Green Bay, home for Denver, and then your first national TV spot at home versus the Seahawks before a week 7 bye, one of the earlier ones with this new 18-week schedule and everything. So out of that first 6 games, you know, what are you looking at there?
Well, I mean, the Bills have had the Steelers' number the last 2 seasons. Now, granted, last year, you know, you caught them on the back end of Ben Roethlisberger's decline, and the year before you played Devlin Hodges, an undrafted rookie fourth-string quarterback that they were relying upon because, you know, Ben Roethlisberger had his season-ending surgery.
Right.
Mason Rudolph was clocked over the head by Myles Garrett with a helmet. Right. And and that was after Earl Thomas decapitated Mason Rudolph by hitting him straight under the chin and knocking him out in the middle of a game. Mason Rudolph just had a rough 2019, man. It's, you know, even though like, you know, people still are kind of down on him in Pittsburgh, I'm like, man, the hits that he took that year, illegal hits, like, you know, things that weren't really part of the game. You know, Earl Thomas, you know, part of the game, but still a little too aggressive, but still he went through a lot. But, and then them trading away Josh Dobbs before any of the injuries happened just didn't work out in their favor. And then, you know, Ben went down, then Mason went down, and now you got Devlin Hodges. So, the Steelers have competed with the Bills in those games, but they haven't played nearly their best football. Like, you know, like they, both games, there's been guys wide open that, you know, Ben just kind of missed or Hodges kind of missed in those situations. And the thing was about Ben, like earlier in the season, he was seeing those guys. He was picking apart defenses, spreading the ball around. It wasn't just, hey, Tony Brown, where are you? I'm getting the ball to you, man. Just, I don't care. There's 3 guys there. We're throwing it to you. You know, he doesn't do that anymore because he doesn't have that guy, but he does. That's kind of where they fell into. So how they play Josh Allen and those Bills, that's going to be very interesting early in the season with a young offensive line, and you're going to go up against a defensive front that has Ed Oliver and Tremaine Edmonds at linebacker. That's going to be an interesting mix. The Packers, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. They have the Packers and the Broncos. So wherever Aaron Rodgers goes between those 2 teams, kind of like, well, they're stuck. They're going to be playing Aaron Rodgers. But, of course, you'd much prefer it to happen with the Broncos, who are really it seems like they're in the middle of a long rebuild right now. They don't know where they're going. But the Packers, you still got all those weapons on the team, so certainly got to watch out for them. The Seahawks, you know, a tough team that always gives the Steelers a hard time. It's funny, for a long time, they owned the Seahawks, you know, as far as it, but then Russell Wilson came and the last 2 times they've played, the Seahawks have eked out really close wins. So that's going to be interesting. And then, you know, you got your Joe Burrow that you're expecting to play.
Right.
But I'm really interested. It's funny, as you say, you know, 5 primetime games, that being a lot. Like, a lot of people were expecting the Steelers to have, like, 10 because they play the Chiefs, they play the Packers, they play the Titans. You know, they're playing. They got all these superstar teams that they're lining up against this year that you know did really well last year. They have the strength, the toughest strength of schedule going into the season. So a lot of people are like, man, like the Steelers, they're going to go 5-12. They're going to fall apart. And I'm just like, I don't know about all that. But it is going to be an interesting year with all the tough games that they had.
Yeah, I mean, after the bye week, week 7, you're on the road at Cleveland, which is a tougher out than it used to be now. Then you go to Chicago for Monday night, your second national TV game, home for the Lions, then at the Chargers, that's on Sunday night, at Cincinnati, home for the Ravens, at the Vikings, quick turnaround, Thursday night football, and then the Titans and Chiefs back-to-back, and I guess CBS just got greedy because those are both Sunday games. And then closing out Monday night against the Browns and at the Ravens to finish up. So those last four games, especially home for Tennessee, at Kansas City, home for the Browns, at the Ravens. You know, if it's coming down to playoff spots, that's a hell of a gauntlet to have to run through to get there.
It certainly is. And the Steelers have faded in the last two seasons. Really, in the last year, because even when they had Devlin Hodges, they were at one point. I believe they were 8-5 before they lost their last three straight. But also a lot of people felt like, yeah, that's just going to come around to bite them. And eventually it did. Like, teams just realized, hey, we're just going to play Devin Hodges this way. And we just need to not let this defense create all the turnovers it does protect the football. And eventually that quarterback will help us win the game. But 2020, you know, with Ben's decline and then all the injuries that happened and not having a run game, that really led to a lot of those problems. So now the question is this just a point? Is this just who the Steelers are right now until they transition out, you know, into a new era where they fall apart late in the season? You know, once is happenstance, twice is maybe circumstance, three times you start to think like maybe that's trending. So that could be a factor. We'll see if it is, but certainly, like you said, a lot of those games, just big teams, and again, we don't know who these teams are. You know, a lot of times people assume like, oh, this the Jaguars after the year that they went to the AFC Championship game, everyone thought, oh, that's going to be a tough game. They fell apart, and now they're the first overall pick of the NFL draft. So, you know, I don't put too much stock in strength of schedule, but I am interested to see how this Steelers team does against some of those squads, because Najee Harris, I'm telling you, man, everything about this guy is that he is the truth. He catches one-handed passes in coverage. He's confident about himself. He gives back to the community. Like when he got drafted, his draft party wasn't in Cleveland at the NFL draft. It wasn't at some hotel where he was partying with his friends. He had it at the homeless shelter that he grew up in, and he used it as a fundraiser as a charity for that organization. So like, that's who this guy is. Ever since he's been in Pittsburgh, he's been a class act so far. So they're really excited to see what he does, because also they're saying like they have to like kick him out of the facility because they're like, no, it's time to go home. Your coach
needs
to see their families.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's going to be interesting to see how can they get a strong running game? When they get that strong running game, can it counter the passing offenses like Patrick Mahomes, like Aaron Rodgers? Can it keep the Titans offense off the field? And then can it help also give the defense more rest against teams that, you know, have threats in their own division, like the Ravens with Lamar Jackson, like the Browns with Nick Chubb? There's going to be a lot of questions there, how they end. But it's certainly going to be, I think it's going to be a very fun season in the AFC North.
I agree. And it's like, I look forward to how it all turns out. That's what makes the NFL the season so exciting. It's like, it's difficult as we, you know, look at 2021, not to look through it through a 2020 lens. Like, well, you know, the Titans were badass last year, so of course they're going to be again this year. And then one key injury here, you know, one loss there, a free agent signing that, you know, that they lost kind of thing. And it's just like all of a sudden they are not the team that they were before. And you see it happen all the time. You mentioned the Jaguars going after 2017, where they were a one half away from beating the Patriots and going to the Super Bowl. And then it was like the same thing, you know, even with me, with the Bears in 2018. We thought in 2019 we were going to just take over the world. I mean, 2018 was an absolute shock as far as how it all went, with, as well as it went year one with Nagy, the progress we saw with Trubisky, and then none of it happened in 2019. We were lucky to be 8-8 in 2019. So it's like looking at it from through the lens of last season, we don't really have a choice but to do that. But at the same time, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody if nothing goes the way that it did last year, because it's a brand new season, you know, new coaches, free agents, guys coming in, it all changes. And like you said, Najee Harris, this could be a guy that he could be a game changer for the Steelers. If he can stabilize that running game, that will be the steam that drives the engine into another direction.
And something to remember here, Larry, is, and I did this research before, and I was looking it up. When the Steelers, they had the worst rushing yards per game and the worst rushing yards per carry. Hmm. I looked up over the past 11 seasons, to go 12-4 with that, that's an anomaly. Yeah. You know, there were a couple teams that had a couple winning seasons, but most of those teams, 3-13, 5-11, you know, just horrible, horrible, horrible. The only exception was really the 2011 Giants, who went on to win the Super Bowl. But even then, they finished the season 9-7. They weren't a consistent team.
Right.
They just got hot in the playoffs with their defense and Eli Manning just doing the weird things that Eli Manning does, right. You know, where he's – I was like, yeah, I'm okay during the season, but playoffs, if Tom Brady's in the way, I'm gonna be elite.
Yeah,
that's just what he does. But like, for by and large, you aren't supposed to go 12-4 when you have the worst rushing game. You aren't supposed to be competing and winning your division, you know that way when you have the worst rushing offense in the league. And with Najee Harris on the Steelers roster, I really think that this team is in a position to really balance it. Even if they're just like 16th, 17th, 18th in rushing, they got the same wide receivers. Ben's going to be – they got a new offensive coordinator who's going to be using a lot more of the concepts that worked early in the season before Randy Feetner, the previous offensive coordinator, kind of changed the offense where it kind of fell apart late in the season. There's going to be some really interesting aspects of the Steelers' offense. And if the defense can stay healthy, if T.J. Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Devin Bush, Joe Hayden, Cam Hayward, and Stephon Tuitt, those are – all kind of like the X-factor guys they have on the defense. If those guys stay healthy and they don't like run, you know, four guys deep into a certain position, like Alex Highsmith goes down and then his backup, kind of how it has gone for the Steelers over the past few years, they're going to be in a position where I think they're going to be one of the toughest outs in the NFL. And that toughest strength of schedule thing won't matter as much if they can get that. But, you know, there's a lot of ifs there. You know, you got to see if Najee Harris clicks with this new offensive line, because it really is a new offensive line.
Yeah.
You got to see can a slot corner emerge, because they're going to bump Cam Sutton outside. I'm confident in Cam Sutton. I've covered him for years, and I think that he's got the moxie to play out there. But you know, who fills in for Mike Hilton, who they lost in free agency? Can a third and fourth edge rusher develop behind Highsmith and Watt, because they're confident behind those guys? And, you know, and again, if they can stay healthy, who can help Devin Bush the most at inside linebacker? Right now, it looks like Robert Spillane's their guy. You know, there's a lot of questions there. And that's what I'm saying. It's not the Steelers. I don't think the Steelers are just going to roll in and just dominate next year. But, you know, the Mike Tannenbaums of the world who say, oh, they're 5-12. Ben Roethlisberger's the worst quarterback in the league. I'm just like, hold your horse. That even happened last year. Like Larry, we do these ultimate crossovers in the Locked On Podcast Network.
Sure,
where I sat down with Kevin from Locked On Browns, Jake and James from Locked On Bengals, and Jeff from Locked On Browns, and Kevin from Locked On Ravens. Excuse me. But we sat down and we all like did our predictions how last year would go before the season went, and all of them had the Steelers basement 5-11, trashed, 4-12, won't make the playoffs, will fall apart, and just, you know, be nothing, Ben retire, and it's going to be sadness for the next decade. And, you know, then they go 12-4, and then they lose in the playoffs. They go, see, we told them they weren't that good. I'm like, no. You said they weren't going to even compete for the playoffs. And here they are hosting a playoff game. And my whole thing, when I said, hey, I'm not sure if they'll win the division, but I know they'll get double-digit wins. I know by the end of the season, they're going to be competing for a playoff spot, and they're probably competing for the division. And lo and behold, they won it. So this year, with what I believe will be a much more balanced offense with that run game and actually having a premier running back in the backfield. Again, he also has to stay healthy. But I can't see this team doing worse than 9-8. Like, I really see this team as, you know, I think their ceiling would be a 13 and I hate the new 17 win numbers thing. 13-4.
Right.
I think that's their ceiling. If they get hot, they can get there. But my realistic prediction for them is 11-6. I think that because the AFC North is going to be so competitive, I think they split with the Browns, split with the Ravens. I think they'll sweep the Bengals. And then those teams, a lot of those teams, they also got to play a lot of the teams that the Steelers are going to play. So, I have them in the same spot as last year, pushing late in the season, competing with the other AFC North teams to see who's going to win. And, it's really going to come down to who's the healthiest late in the season.
Well, I'm very interested to find out how it's going to turn out. And we'll talk about this more when we have you back, to preview, week 9 when the Bears and the Steelers meet up for Monday Night Football before the Bears have their Week 10 bye. So it'll be an important game. It might be the last start for Andy Dalton before Justin Fields takes over after the bye, or, who knows what's going to happen there. Matt Nagy, with his comments, is adamant about Dalton being the starter. He's QB1. Justin Fields is going to learn, but also kind of talking out of the other side of his mouth, we're not going to leave him on the bench just to leave him on the bench. We'll see what happens. Trust the process, blah, blah, blah. So who the hell knows what's going to happen? He's leaving it open for it to go either way. Best case scenario, Justin Fields is Pat Mahomes this year. He sits and learns for a year, takes over the team in 2022, and we're off to, happiness and richness and all that kind of stuff. But also, don't be surprised if Justin Fields is starting Week 9 against the Steelers. But two other...
I'd love to see that.
So would I. I would, actually. Talking...
I'm such a fan of Justin Fields as a player. And that's one aspect. I'm an analyst. I do this to break this down. But I root for people.
Sure.
And Justin Fields, the hit that he took at Ohio State, that he just kept getting back up from, he just looked like such a real leader. He has the arm to play in the NFL. He has the mobility to be a threat. And the leadership, that to me is what spoke out to him. When he was falling down the draft boards, I was like, man, this is ridiculous. Like, whoever gets him is gonna be in a really good spot. And I really think Chicago, you guys got a steal in where you got him.
I do.
So that's what I think. I want to see him play against the Steelers because I want to see this kid play more. I want to see him get into the NFL and show people, hey, you messed up by passing up on him.
Yeah, he does kind of have that chip on his shoulder. He's happy to be in Chicago, not thrilled that he was number 11 off the board, not thrilled that he was quarterback number 4 taken in the first round, because at the beginning of the offseason, he was the number 2 pick going to the Jets after Trevor Lawrence. And somehow throughout the offseason, I saw a mock draft, and I've mentioned this a few times on the show, I saw mock drafts where they had Justin Fields going 32 to the Buccaneers. I was like, there's no way in hell that happens.
Yeah.
If the Bears stand pat,
the Steelers, they would have picked him.
Yeah, if the Bears stand pat and he's still there at 20, Bears aren't dancing in the streets over that. There's no way they sit there at 20 and Justin Fields falls in their lap and they don't take him. No freaking way. So, it's like, I don't know what happened with his stock, if that seizure thing is what kind of, had him falling down the board or whatever, but he's been as advertised so far. The leadership, he's already telling receivers you're supposed to be standing here, run this route so you cut it off there. He's a smart kid. He knows the offense, or he's got a good grasp of it at the very least if he's out there telling everybody what they need to do. So I too am really looking forward to it. And talking to you and all of the other representatives of each team that I've spoken to thus far has kind of killed my whole vibe as far as let him sit, let him learn. We don't want to put him out there too soon. It's like talking to everybody else and hearing your enthusiasm is to see Justin Fields. Yeah. It's like, I'm on that. Yeah, throw him out there. Screw Andy Dalton. It's like, I think we'll be fine with Andy Dalton. I like Andy Dalton. I think he's a good quarterback. He's had a good long career so far in the NFL. No hate for Andy Dalton, but it's just like, now it's like, the hell with it. Throw the kid out there, man. Let's see what he can do. Why wait? He can learn and play, it just killed my whole, trying to be, cooler heads prevailed. I want to be smart about this. Put him out there at the right time. The hell with it. Just throw out the process. Put the kid out there. Let's see how it goes. Week 1 against the Rams. Let's do it.
The Steelers and Bears play on Monday Night Football, right?
Yes.
You need to go look up what Andy Dalton's primetime record is.
I know it can't be good if you're mentioning that.
It that was the thing. Andy Dalton, there'd be years, he's a good game manager. He's a good, I can take what's there type of guy, but he's not the killer for you.
Right.
And when the light turned on, it just, And sometimes it wasn't even his fault. It was just bad. It was just like a bad penny just followed him everywhere. Like a dark cloud hung over him.
Sure.
And just bad things would happen. Of course, the dark cloud was also might have just been the Bengals organization. True. They are that. But like as a guy who watched him for years as being an opponent to Pittsburgh, even in the year, like there was the one year where they won the division and they hosted the Steelers in the first round of the playoffs. You know, he got hurt and then the Steelers found the way to win in the most wackiest situation.
Yeah, Ryan I remember Xavier that game. Yeah.
Ripping, like all that kind of stuff. But even when he did play, I mean, they'd have things lined up and things would just go poorly for them and fall apart. It's just, you know, I would not be on the Andy Dalton starting on Monday Night Football train. I'd certainly be on. If I was you guys, get Justin Fields out there. Unless you feel like you can't protect him. Like, I haven't studied the Bears offensive line, you know, enough to see where they're at. If you feel like he needs to get better protection before you risk, you know, an injury that could ail his entire career, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like, you know, I mean, you still got Allen Robinson out there. And I really like him as a wide receiver. You know, you still got talent, you know, there, and you still got a defense that can get after the quarterback on the other side to get you more opportunities. If Justin Fields knows the offense, you feel like you can protect him, put him out there. Let him see what he can do. Andy Dalton, at this point in his career, is a career backup.
Yeah. So, like I said, just ruining my whole let's be smart about this, you know, cooler heads prevail. Like, nah, to hell with it. Put him out there. Let's see what he can do. He's the future anyway, so let's have the future start now. So. And then just one last thing I wanted to mention. I've mentioned this to everybody I've talked to in the division thus far. The last two times the Bears have played the AFC North, we've swept the division and been the uncrowned AFC North champion for each of those last two trips, 2013, 2017. And also, like, going into our last matchup back in 2017, saw some stats where it was like, yeah, the record between the Bears and the Steelers, like, for the last however meetings is like 12-1 in favor of Chicago. That blew my mind when I saw that. It's like, you know, there's just some teams that have your number. Like, whenever the Bears play the Dolphins, God help us, you know, they just like, and I don't know what it is about Miami. They always seem to be able to eke one out over us. They were our one loss in 1985 when we won the Super Bowl and we're the best team of all time and all that kind of stuff. It's just something about a team when they match up, they just have your number, whether it's in Chicago or Pittsburgh. The Bears have one loss over however many games it was in that one particular stat. And it's just like, that's how can that be true? It's like, I can't believe that. It kind of blew my mind when I read that. So I'm interested to see if that trend can continue and where this game goes.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I've been to the last year, two Steelers Bears games. The last time was actually my first time covering live sporting events for DKPittsburghSports.com. It was actually my second away game that I had visited to. So I was in Chicago for that one. And that was a lot of people forget that was the Villanueva stand and flag game
it
where
was.
The entire team stood inside. I can tell you just from sources that I have, the entire team was with that whole situation. They were not having it, and like they were just like, look, like we understand that you want to respect your country and all that, but you know we all voted as a team to do this one thing, and then you go out there and made it a situation where you know CNN was showing up in the Steelers. You know, press meetings now, which never happens unless, you know, there's a Villanueva situation going
right.
on. So that was causing a lot of rifts that game. And they played horribly. And that was because that was a 13-3 year. That was one of their few losses that season. And it went to overtime. I remember that game. And I remember going in the locker room and trying to talk to some of the players. And they were just furious about so many things that day. And then the time before that was Antonio Brown's really like come up in this game. He had like three touchdowns against the Bears.
Yeah.
But that was of course just that team, they were 8-8 that year. That was when they were growing. The next year when they got things really rolling, that was at Heinz Field. The next year was when they really kicked in the gear. And then the time before that, I believe, was 2009.
Yep.
That was when they lost Troy Polamalu that season and just things, you know, they were 9-7, they were an okay team, but without Polamalu in that defense, they weren't the same. But the thing is that you got to understand, you guys, the Bears organization, y'all are on a lot of walls in Pittsburgh lore. Like when you walk into a Steelers fan's house, that picture of Jerome Bettis utterly running
Urlacher.
Over Brian Urlacher into the snow.
In 05,
In 05. That is on so many people's walls. Because Jerome Bettis is like one of the most beloved Pittsburgh Steelers of all time. And for him to have kind of a run in the game, they had to win to make the playoffs, and then They went on to win the Super Bowl that year in his hometown of Detroit.
Right.
That whole run being magical, and that run itself, that like where he plowed over Urlacher and then got a second guy. Like I think he ran over two guys on his way to the end zone. They played. That holds a special place for a lot of Steelers fans. So I mean, I feel like you know, whoever out there has in touch with the voodoo god of football, they probably just said like, look, just give us this one, and we can lose to the Bears for the next 20 years. We're fine with that. And it's very possible that could continue this year, especially if Justin Fields starts. But it's funny, like the Bears, because I have a few friends who are diehard Bears fans. Mm-hmm. And like when that happened, they were like, oh, I hate y'all. But then like ever since then, I mean, it's been close games. It's been odd games. It's been strange things. So yeah. It could be a very interesting part. And I also think this, I think, the Steelers play the Bears right after they play the Browns, you know, 2 weeks after the bye, right?
Right, yeah.
That to me is going to be such a metal tester for this offensive line that's young and forming. They're going to come off a bye week after playing seven games. They're going to get a defense with Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney and all these other guys who are going to be coming after them. And then they got to play the Bears with Khalil Mack, Robert Quinn, and Roquan Smith and Danny Trey, like that could be back-to-back tests. If they can go through that game, leaving Ben Roethlisberger unscathed and he's still healthy, that I think those two games right there, that's going to be where they might gain some confidence. Be like, look, we're young, but we can figure this out. And you know, and if it goes badly, that might be like a hey, who do we got to bring up here? Who's some of the young guys that are doing better on the roster that might need new chances? But that could be a big turning point in the season either way for this first Steelers.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's dead set in the middle of the season. So as far as questions on who our teams are at that point should pretty much be answered, you know, like just heading into the second half of the year. They've had half a season to figure it out at that point. You know, the Bears are going into the bye after that game, so week nine will be game number nine for them. So they'll already be at the halfway point of the year. You'll be a game behind us because you have a bye week before. But, like, the questions as the identity of the team and who they're going to be should have a pretty good idea at that point. And it should be an interesting game, especially taking place in Pittsburgh. So looking forward to it. So it should be fun. And we look forward to having you back then to preview the game, see how that one's going to go and how the season's going at that point. Is it Justin Fields or is Andy Dalton going to test his primetime record against the Steelers wearing a Bear uniform? So be interested to see how it all turns out. Look forward to talking to you again.
I am here, Leah. Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun. Follow me on Twitter at Carter Critique. Read my work at dkpittsburghsports.com. Not just on the Steelers, we cover the Pirates, the Penguins. I do all the coverage on Pitt football and Pitt basketball. So I don't know where the NBA draft will go. You guys might pick up Justin Champagne. I've written a lot about him. So you can check him out. If you're always looking at the young guys coming up in Pittsburgh, they had six guys make the NFL draft. You want coverage of those guys? That stuff you can get for free on our website. So check us out, dkpittsburghsports.com, and subscribe to the Locked On Steelers podcast. Give us a 5-star review. That stuff really helps us out.
Amen. Amen. Appreciate it, Chris. We'll talk to you in a few months when we get ready for week nine.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Larry.
As always, want to thank my guest, Christopher Carter from Locked On Steelers. Be sure and check him out on his social media and on the site where he does his work. And you know, like I said, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you never know with the Steelers. The funny thing is, it just seems like whenever you're down on the Steelers, whenever you have that super low opinion of them, when they look like they're scrambling, that's the year that they go 14-2 and run right through it, and they go to the Super Bowl and things like that. So I don't want anybody to be surprised if that does happen. You know, it's like, I know we just spent the last three episodes with Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Cleveland all getting, you know, given a lesser opinion of the Steelers and how they're washed up and they're done, but they are the Steelers, and this is kind of what they do. So We'll have to wait and see if, you know, that's as Chris Berman used to say for years on ESPN, that's why they play the games. You know, if opinion was taken as fact, the Steelers are the fourth place finisher in the AFC North this year because Ben Roethlisberger is 180 years old. The defense, you know, the defense might keep him in some games, but they can't run the football. And all you got to do is neutralize the passing game. And you got the Steelers by the short and curlies. We'll see how Najee Harris changes the perception of the run game and how it might balance out the offense and make life easier on Big Ben and company. So it's, as usual, it's just a wait-and-see game to see how it all unfolds for the Steelers. So that is going to do it for the AFC North. We're finally done with all of the devils that we don't know. Now it's time to move on to the devils that we do. We'll be starting that on Monday with Jeremy Reisman from SB Nation's Pride of Detroit to preview the Detroit Lions. Then next Thursday will be Chris Gates from the Daily Norseman from SB Nation as well to preview the Vikings. Then the following Monday, our good friend Evan Western from Acme Packing Company to preview the Green Bay Packers. And, we might have chatted for a second or two about Aaron Rodgers, you know, just kind of in passing, you know, because it's not a big deal what's going on with that, right? So, and then, of course, the finale of it all, our good friend Lauren Cox from Locked On Bears will come in and help us preview the 2021 Chicago Bears and see if we can squeeze the Justin Fields talk to just inside of about 6 hours. Because anyone who knows and has listened to the episodes that Lauren and I do together, they tend to run a little long. So, pop some popcorn, put your feet up, get a nice cold drink when you listen to that one, or plan it when you're on a 12-hour road trip across the country, because we just might be able to squeeze it into that time frame. So be sure to come in and check all that stuff out. Get me on the social media at BTU_Larry on the Twitter and on the Instagram. I'm not a big Instagram guy, so it's just like episode notifications go out on Instagram. And then there's the Facebook group. Just search Bears Talk Underground on Facebook. They'll take you right in. Give us a like, join the group, get in on the discussion. And then finally, Club 34/7 on the Spotify Green Room app, formerly the Locker Room, as you guys have heard the ads in the shows. Every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock Eastern. Be sure to tune in. That's my weekly time slot. But when the season starts, we're going to be moving it out, because I know I got a lot of people overseas. Like, the 7-hour time difference would be, you know, if they want to join in on the Spotify Green Room shows on Wednesdays, it's like 3 a.m. on Thursday out there. So, not getting a lot of attention from my UK people over there overseas. So when the season starts, maybe doing some live rooms during halftime of the games. Like all of our preseason games, I think all three of them are like noon on Saturday or something like that, which would be perfect to maybe kind of do a watch along. If you guys are interested in that, hop on there and we'll just kind of watch the game together and things like that, or do a game recap afterwards to get on and talk about how good or bad Dalton and Justin Fields look, what the team looks like against the Dolphins or the Bills would actually probably be an interesting matchup the following week in the second week of the preseason and what have you. So, you know, we're all getting close to it. Want to be a little more interactive, get some more people showing up into the Spotify Green Room shows to kind of get the discussion going. Hopefully that will kick up a notch when the season finally gets started. So, anyway, come back on Monday for our Jeremy Reisman, the Pride of Detroit, to help preview the Detroit Lions as we get our NFC North brethren going and we get those preview episodes going and we start to wrap up the 2021 opponent preview series. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.